My guest today is the Flower Machine. They're here. They're ready to go. We're going to start by playing a track from a CD that they brought in. Then we'll get into some interview and some live stuff. You can check out myspace.com/theflowermachine for more information on this artist. And stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
Stand away, let your play, when you drift away, where you are, buying cars on a rainy day, there's plenty of rhythm for pretty balloons to fly. And cruel, and no one could ever bring you down. Alone in the market square, city center, millionaire, asleep on the underground, just spinning around. I feel good.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Just lovelily.
It's nice to be here.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for battling the traffic to make it out here to Mid-Wilshire from the other side, from the left side of California.
Yes, we almost wrecked two trucks, but they're okay.
Oh, it's worth it. You know, you got to suffer for your art. Well, they have to suffer for your art. So why don't we get down to the basics. Who are you and what do you play?
I'm Peter. I'm the singer and the main writer. And
He's the good old leader. Our leader.
And this is Brian over here.
I play the mellotron and the rhythm guitars.
Now, listening to your music, it's very textured, and you know you get this idea in your head of a large group of people, a polyphonic spree cult or something. You know, with a lot of different sounds. Is it just the two of you, Peter and Brian?
Oh no, it's we also have a rhythm section. We have a bass player and a drummer. Chris and Jim. Oh. You know them.
Yes, hi Chris, hi Jim.
Too bad. Yeah, what we tend to do is just overdub the hell out of stuff in the studio when we're working on stuff for an album or a single release. We just kind of everything in the kitchen sink goes on, sound effects, and we have the mellotron stuff. So,
and do you have a slightly different setup for in-studio recording as opposed to your live performance?
Actually, the nice thing is live, we pretty much sound like this, like our records now, because we have... Brian has this whole Mellotron thing.
You keep pointing at me like I was supposed to do something.
No, no. At some point, no, you're lovely.
You're supposed to nod in agreement,
yes.
I think, is
yes,
what it's like.
He's right. We got to talk.
So, yeah, no, we're actually able to get pretty close to all that's, you know, having all the bits going on, all the parts and the sounds. So.
All right, well, you guys ready to jump into a live song?
Yeah, okay.
What would you like to do for us first?
This is from our first album. This is called I Am the Coelacanth.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine.
Things to buy for free, and all the piggy banks are standing in a dream over the bridge to the sea, over the bridge to the sea. So the world from they to you to me. I am the coelacanth, the veil of tangerine.
That was awesome. Great start to the show.
A little bit of the other side of the Flower Machine, not quite the big, what you were just talking about, the big orchestrated, thick recording thing, but the acoustic side, as it were.
Yeah, well, that's an important element of Is Good. You know, we can get the full sound from listening to your CD. My audience wants to know what you guys are like in your underwear, you know. So.
Put your underwear back on, please, Pete.
We wanted to have the London Philharmonic for that last one, but they got hung up on a crosstown bus.
In the same traffic we got in.
Exactly.
Yeah, but before we get into an in-depth interview, I have to know, what's a coelacanth?
A coelacanth.
I mean, exactly.
It's a prehistoric fish. They were thought to be extinct, and then in 1938, one was found in South Africa on a fishing boat. And actually, the girl that found the first coelacanth was named Marjorie Latimer, who's just died recently, actually. She was like 90-something.
Did she get to hear your song before she died?
Well, she was alive when the album was released, so
she was smart. She listened to it. Yeah.
We try not to like stalk and harass 97-year-old women, so you know. So I don't know if she actually ever heard it. But.
So how did this project start, Peter? Where are you from? Did it start as with you as a solo artist and looking for artists to kind of fill out the sound?
Yeah, it really did. I was in Majestic, which used to record for Shelf Life. Perhaps they still do. I don't know. But, I'd started, we used to have longish breaks in that group, and I started working on a solo thing, and then Micro Indie wanted to put it out. And then it was weird, because it was almost like an afterthought. Like, Mike from Micro Indie said, well, you're going to have to do gigs and get up and sing. And I'm like, oh, my God, I never even thought of that. So then we put a band together 4 years ago, so we've been doing this for 4 years.
What was it that you wanted to do in your solo career that was different from your past experiences?
Just have a band where actually everybody gets along. Every other band I'd ever been in just
Shut up.
Yes. Stop it. Everybody just would fight constantly. And I
no, we wouldn't.
Well, once in a while.
Just being contrary now.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, but even this band we've gone through, you know, a lot of different people have been in and out of this band, you know, probably about 6 or 7 over the past 4 years. But we've arrived, I think, at a lineup now where everybody's gets along and it seems to work.
And did the people that you found to make up your band contribute heavily to the sound that the band ended up having? Was it different from your original idea?
Everybody that's been in it has brought their own kind of, impact to the overall vibe. I mean, that's the nice thing. Because I could never be like one of those type of people that tells people what to play. It's so boring.
Yeah, I think that's one of the good things about the lineup now is that you can bring in your idea and have the shape of the tune, and everybody can add their own thing to it, and it really works out to your liking, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Brian, did you discover Peter, or did Peter discover you?
Oh, let's see. We were actually working in the studio. I was recording, engineering the stuff, which I did on this album, most of it anyway. And I think that's how it was. We were recording. You came to my studio one day, I think, knocked on the door and said, can I come in and record? And after they said, as long as I can play in the Flower Machine, and I think that was how things started, yes. Yeah. But no, actually, what it was is I was doing a lot of recording, and when it got to the bit on stage, Pete's like, well, we're going to need some keyboards and such on stage, and I think you basically asked me to play, or maybe after you had that argument with the other keyboard player.
Yeah, no, it was, so you've been in the band a year now, so Brian was the last to join.
Do I get a cake?
Yeah, and a gold watch.
Happy birthday. Peter, what came to you first? Was it guitar or singing?
I used to always play guitar, and I used to always write songs, and it's been this weird progression through bands. Like, I was the drummer when I was a teenager, and then I was a bass player in a band for a long time, and then guitar, and then sort of slowly singing, and then now it's, yes.
So that's why we're in your band, because you can't do everything on stage. You can't have drums and bass and guitar. Well, you could, the one-man band, but that's why,
Yes.
But it's a good team. We get along well, and.
I was just sort of looking at your influences on MySpace / The Flower Machine, and they're all from a certain era and a certain kind of vibe. Is that the music you were listening to when you started writing your own music?
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah. That mix of Bowie and Floyd and...
Yeah, definitely. And I also like a lot of unfashionable things like Hatfield and the North and some of the early sort of British progressive rock stuff. You know, progressive rock is actually a huge influence on us, early Genesis and... You know, some of the more crazy stuff. I think a lot of people are starting to move in that direction unwittingly, because it's like there's a lot of really good psychedelic bands, but there's ones that are far more purist about it than we are, which is funny, too, because when we first started putting out records, we had, we had a few, freaks in the fascist press kind of knocking on us about being too psychedelic or too cookie-cutter 60s, whereas I don't really hear our stuff that way.
Well, is that a challenge for you, sort of living in the modern indie rock world where, the influences are bands that are, just coming out now? Do you put a lot of thought in sort of identifying your sound and staying true to your vibe?
Yeah, not in terms of the larger business, but yeah, I mean, we attack what we do, with a strength of purpose that is, we don't even really have to think about it, it's just like when I make a record, this is what they sound like. Mm-hmm. It's like if somebody with a gun to my head, I couldn't make anything else, This is just, it's this or nothing.
Well, good, because, eventually they'll put a gun to your head and say, make something for the radio, and, you'll...
Yeah, in fact, that nearly happened in the street outside on the way out.
That's right.
Amidst the dead birds and the garbage.
Oh, lovely.
Well, on that note, why don't we listen to another track from the CD you brought in for us today? Okay. What do you recommend?
Track 8. It's something no one's heard. It's called In a Play Anyway.
All right, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine. Stick around.
Through time, corridor, spinning back to before, to where you are. Where you live in a cage, where you sleep in the rain. It seems insane, and you're
And we're back on Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine. Well, Peter and Brian from the Flower Machine. So we were just talking while we were listening to that song about how your music is perceived. And, you know, especially in this day and age, I don't know if it was the case when your influences were at the top of their game, but it certainly is now, where it seems very important to be able to compartmentalize you into something that can be sold, you know?
Yeah.
This is emo punk, and this is that, and whatever. And the word indie has lost all meaning,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
So it sounds like it's been a real challenge for you guys, sort of doing what you love to do without being put into categories that you're not necessarily trying to be put in.
Well, yeah, the challenge was mainly the gigging thing, which was, you know, a couple of years ago, was much more difficult than it is now. The nice thing now is you've got people like Brian Blue at the Knitting Factory just putting on things.
Who's
like
been very gracious to us. Yes, yes. Brian's been great.
Putting on Twilight of the Gods, which is great, because that's one of those things where you get a lot of like-minded bands, and we've played with some great bands. I mean, it's the case now where there's actually like about two or three bands in L.A. that I think should, you know, probably be, you know, famous bands because they're that good. And it's great when you play shows with them and they seem to like us as well.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I feel that way doing this show, that I feel like I know some of the best musicians in the world, but yeah, I'm the only one who knows about it.
Yeah. It's a shame, really, sometimes.
Yeah, it's that weird kind of niche, you know, because it's like, well, if you're talking about psychedelic bands, both established and not as well established, I mean, it tends to be guys in sort of early to late 30s and who are all doing it for artistic reasons, you know, kind of a purist approach. I guess we fall into that bucket as well. But the thing that's then heartbreaking is you reel across town and you see bands that are like 20, 25, and they're the ones getting major label record contracts, because major labels know that guys that age don't argue. They just sign whatever tour for as long as they're told and let them remix their record any way they want.
Right, and they're easily compartmentalized into a group that can be, you know, turned into little blocks for sale on corporate radio. This word's psychedelic has been tossed around a lot this morning. How would you define what that means? How is that different from other forms of rock?
It's just a vibe. And I think like in the late 60s, not that I would remember, it's just that idea of trying to do something that has no direct relationship to commerce, in the sense that it's artistically motivated. And the idea is, can you top this? And that's, you know, and that's the exciting thing, to actually have other bands that are of that mindset, you know, because it's like you can all get blown away by each other's records or performances, and there's that real sense that it's evolving or reaching towards something.
I think too, it's also no restraint on the time limit. You're not stick to 3-minute songs. You know, it's okay to go a little bit longer or have extended solo sections or intros, let's say, or outros. And I think to me, that's a bit of the, not necessarily psychedelic vibe, but just the looseness of the music. It's okay to play a little bit longer.
Yeah,
you should have done when you made your point, as opposed to when, you know, typical song structure would dictate this is the end.
It's like, oh, we're over 3 minutes. Okay, you guys, come, we got to shorten this. What are we going to cut out? Rather than like, oh, let's just flow with it. If it works, great. If it ends up being four or a minute and a half, like, who's your one influence that has some of those 1-minute songs? Sometimes it's,
oh yeah, Guided by Voices. Like, that's great example, because I mean, that's kind of like the negative thing of the business. It's like, you know, like they had their mid-90s peak and then everybody got bored writing about them. But, you know, they still had great records later on, you know.
And some of the short tunes, it was just so great. But yet there'd be long pieces as well. So
yeah, it's just that idea that there are no rules. And I think bands that exemplify that are the things that people get into.
So would you say that but you must occasionally feel like you have to restrain yourself, like if a song is meandering and it's...
No, that's the great thing. Plus, you know, at our meager level of fame, we're free to make any kind of record we want. And,
nice.
You know, there's nobody sort of saying, no, this won't do, lads. You know, you have to...
I think the only time we restrain ourselves, maybe if it just isn't good, we say, okay, well, this has got to be better. We've got to play that better, maybe, or sing that. We do restrict ourselves as far as the... I think maybe it's just the general quality of it. We always want it to be at least the best we can make it.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's, it's really cool, but it's not done very well.
Right. Yeah, you know, we're very perfectionist, you know, about it. It's not like, it's not slapdash or just, oh, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's, everything is very specifically done to a point of
tedium.
Well, on that note.
Stop that.
To where it, yeah.
Why don't we jump into another live song?
Okay.
What would you like to play?
This one's called I Am the Door. This is another one from Marmoset Meadow, our as of yet unreleased second album, which we'll probably have out later this year.
And Brian, just for our audience's sake, what is it that you're playing?
This is actually it's called the it's the Mellotron sample. It's called the M-tron, and it's actually a It's an actual real sample of Mellotron, so I'm going to give you a little bit of the intro here in the background, and this is I Am the Door. Right?
Slowly through an empty town, painting posters for the underground on the wall. You'll never understand at all just who you are when you call. I am the dog. Circles like a wind up clown. No one cares if you don't come around anymore. You'll never understand at all just who you are when you call. I am the dog. Reaching to the clouds, all the candy canes are sleeping now in a row. You'll never understand at all just who you are when you call. I am the dawn.
Wow.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Pete.
Really, really fantastic, guys. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is The Flower Machine, myspace.com/TheFlowerMachine. Is that your only web presence at the moment?
No, we have like a regular website too, theflowermachine.com, which it's not very exciting. It's fairly static. But go there anyway, everyone. It's great.
Now, I think you have a unique style of singing. It's almost... I don't know. Sometimes I felt like I had to, during that song, I had to look back at you and make sure you weren't using some sort of device to harmonize with yourself.
Oh, no, no.
It's sticking out of his throat.
Yeah.
There.
You know, it's very smooth, and it just sounds like more than one person singing at the same time. But I can't quite put my finger on it. But
yeah.
When you started singing, did it just come out this way, or is this did you sort of have to develop your style of vocalization?
No, actually, when I started singing, my girlfriend at the time said, "No, don't sing. You guys should get a real singer." You know, so for years I never sang in
She's
bands.
No longer with you. Is she?
No, yes. No, that would be the emphasis on the phrase ex girlfriend. But since then, yeah, I don't know. I just finally started, doing the recordings myself and singing and realizing, wow, I can do this, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, the style is just completely, I didn't work at it, so.
What about writing? Tell me about the kinds of songs that you write, themes that you tend to keep coming back to? Are you writing more abstract material, or are you writing stories?
I do kind of a mix between songwriting and surrealistic page writing, too. So I think the two kind of intersect, certainly.
I don't think you don't actually go out of your way, though, write strange lyrics, though, right?
Oh,
some
no,
of them just come to you.
Yeah, a lot of the songs just appear in their entirety. It's almost kind of strange, you know, like you'll just... Like a specific experience will trigger something, and then you'll try to write a song that reflects that. And so it almost like the song writes itself and the words suggest themselves. And that's how you know when it's done, or that's how I know when it's done.
The guitar plays itself. The keyboards play themselves. After a while, you don't have to show up at all.
You're fired, Brian. Well, what usually comes first for you, the instrumental part of the song or the lyrics?
The music always comes first. Like you'll hear a sequence of chords or the tune, and that'll suggest lyrics, and then that'll suggest an arrangement, and then... That's it.
And then we're suggesting gigs, and then we're suggesting people come out to see us.
Yes.
Now, do you have CDs for sale currently?
Oh, yeah. We've got Chalk Dust Dream of the Tea Cozy Mitten Company is our first album. That's been out for 3 years, and it's just been released in Thailand on Small Room in Bangkok, Thailand. It's selling really well there. Apparently, there's a royalty check on the way, which we were shocked.
Let's go. Wow.
Yeah, let's go there, be pop stars.
And then the new record.
And the new record is called Marmoset Meadow, and we're probably going to try to put that out by the end of the year.
Is that something you're going to release on your own, or are you with an indie label for that as well?
We're still on Micro Indie in the States, and we're on Small Room in Thailand, and we've worked with Northern Star Records, the UK website that does mainly psych and experimental stuff, and they put out an EP of ours. So we've kind of been putting out bits of Marmoset Meadow over the past year. One is a single. There's the Orange Balloons single on Micro Indie, and then there's the I'm the Door EP on Northern Star. So it's all bits of it.
And you're hearing bits today.
And you're hearing other bits today, like the song that we played on the CD. That's nobody's heard that one yet.
And if someone wants to get your music, where would you recommend they start? Just go to your website, or is it on iTunes?
Just about all our stuff to date is on iTunes. You can get everything on Amazon or Micro Indie or Tone Vendor has all our stuff. In the UK, there's a label called Juno, I think, that has our stuff. So all you have to do is type in Flower Machine in Google, and there's like all sorts of options to buy it.
Cool. Why don't we listen to another track from the CD you brought in?
Okay.
What do you recommend?
Track 10. It's called Today We Live Again.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine.
A building on sunset, a parking garage, more plastic tunes to fill your room, in cinnamon waves under pineapple skies, and everyone is turning on
today.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine. What was that? That little thing at the end?
That was your X-ray.
One of the endless variety of little companions.
Flowing in and out of the...
Just kidding, folks.
Burned forever into audio history. You guys have any live gigs coming up in the near future?
You know, we do. We're playing September 23rd at the Knitting Factory. It's going to be a big show, but it's mysterious, and we're not going to say any more about it.
You can't say what's... No. Oh.
Wouldn't even dare.
Well, tell me a little bit more about your live performance experience in the past. I know we were talking about in the beginning of the interview how it was sort of difficult to find the right place. People didn't necessarily know where to book you with what bands. And yeah. How do you know... Like, what is, aside from the Knitting Factory, like, generally speaking, what is a good venue for you?
It was a really good gig.
Yeah,
was our Coach House gig down in San Juan Capistrano.
Yeah, just a couple months ago in late May.
That was fantastic for us, I think.
Yeah, it was a big room. 200 people were there.
Do you prefer playing for a bigger crowd as opposed to a more intimate acoustic kind of crowd?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems to be easier with more people there. I don't know why. And the odd thing is, though, I would imagine, because we were opening for that Doors cover band Wild Child, which is kind of weird.
But it was perfect for us because the crowd was the 60s thing.
2/3 of the people there could not possibly have been familiar with our records, but the applause and the
really
reaction
enjoyed us,
was amazing. Yeah. You know, it really made us kind of rethink what we do. Like, we'd rather maybe do theater shows or something.
Yes, or I don't know, join the circus maybe. Yeah.
Well, how much of what you do is alive? Is the live performance, and how much is the recording? I mean, are you a recording artist, live performer? Can you separate the two?
Yeah, I think we score higher as recording artists than live performers. You know, I think we can definitely take that further.
But that's not to say that the Flower Machine show isn't very exciting and isn't very. I mean, because certainly what we do create in the live situation is very powerful.
Yeah.
And very punchy, and we've got a great drummer, and we've got some fantastic bass lines. So I think the vibe that we create the show, it's not quite as layered. Or, like you're talking about, is as thick and sounding, but it's very, very powerful and punchy. So I think we do real well with the power of the live show.
Yeah, if anything, we're too loud a lot of the time.
Well, as the originator of the songs, is there a format that you personally prefer, like recording in the studio versus performing in front of a live audience?
I find, recording a lot more relaxing. It was funny, too, because... you know, we played the Knitting Factory right around Christmas, and at the time I was going out with this really, like, a girl who was really a bad influence, and that's the only show I've ever played in my life where I was walking across the road to do the set and thinking, I may be too out of it to be able to actually do this.
Oh, wow.
But you were so good that night, so fantastic.
No, I wasn't. I could just barely stand up.
Yes, and the brilliance of that all on our DVD, which you can get. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
but same available. With, like, once you get out to the stage, I think, Pete, is when the magic happens. Like I said, our Coach House show down south.
Thank you.
What do you want your audience to get out of your music? I mean, do you want them to respond, to the music as a whole, or be moved by the instrumentation, or listen to the lyrics, and, in your mind, like, the perfect Flower Machine, listener, what do they get out of the experience?
Hopefully you're just trying to blow people's mind with sound, or like they used to say jokingly in press releases from the 60s, we're trying to create a mind-altering experience without drugs. insofar as that's possible.
Nice. Well, on that note, I think we should go into another live song.
Okay.
What are you going to play?
This one's another Marmoset Meadow track. It's called Over the Garden Wall.
All right. Kick it, Pete.
Still sniffing glue, what you do today? Nobody cares at all. Always stoned, hooked on candy canes over the garden wall.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. My guest is the Flower Machine. I see you guys when you're performing just now, kind of, you know, looking to each other and communicating.
Yes, because how we didn't going. Rehearse that one.
we did only 20 times, so we didn't get to make those things.
Was that something that you have to do in a live performance? It's important to be able to communicate with each other about what's going on while you're playing?
Yeah, the telepathy between the guys in the band at this point after a year of doing it is pretty much, we don't even really have to worry about it. It's doing something like this, which is completely different, where we're just kind of looking at each other like going, well, what are you going to do? I don't know.
just a general sort of a communication without having to say, go to this part next, or like squinting at it. And I think it's also just seeing, make sure Pete's still not levitating off the stage, and you're still there. But, you know, I think...
well, if you want a mind-blowing experience.
yeah, that would kick us over the edge.
Watch us levitate, yes.
Thinking about modern music now... And I know the point behind psychedelic music is not setting rules for yourself, but are there things that you, as an artist, want to avoid doing that you hear people doing a lot now, and you think, you know, if I ever start writing songs like that, somebody better stop me.
Yes.
Well, what are some of those things that you want to make sure directions you don't want to go in?
Actually, the funny thing is, it's just I can sum it up into one word, funk. You know, it's like I don't know because we've gone through like it's a bit like that Spinal Tap movie. We've gone through about 10 drummers in the past 4 years before we arrived at Jim. But you know, sometimes drummers come in and I don't know what it is with some drummers are just crackers. You know, they sit down, and they go, "I'm hearing kind of a funk thing here," and I'm, you know.
But we love all drummers, don't we?
Yes, we do. They're all wonderful, really.
So we don't have letters and emails from drummers.
Don't send them.
But yes, it's funk, but it's not like the George Clinton type of funk necessarily that you're looking for. It's the particular groove or the particular style that works with the Pete vibe.
Yeah, it's so hard finding the right drummer, I think, but. Yeah, I mean, not that I like, you know, George.
I think
Clinton,
you're in a hole now. Pull yourself
out. I really dug myself into a trench here.
It's more of a vibe and a groove, I think, which we're doing great. And I think that's what I was saying earlier about the power of the show is the punchiness we come up with. It's not necessarily – some of it's a little bit lighter on the record and some of it we just really drive it a little bit harder
in
the show. I think.
You don't want somebody in your band who's doing something that may be great but isn't reflective of what you intended in the songwriting process. Yeah. So if you have a drummer who's doing a funk beat, which may be like an awesome, you know, funk beat, but that has nothing to do with what your song is about, you know, and that must be a challenge for you, you know, sort of as the front man of a group, you have to have people behind you who care about the song in the same way that you care about it and not look at it as a reflection of them, but a reflection of you.
That is the greatest challenge for any musician. I mean, because, you know, you can have guys that can play, you know, just virtuoso level anything, and then but their tastes are wrong for what you're trying to do. You know, I've had that experience in studios with people that can play anything, and then when you roll the tape and say play to this, it's like they have no ideas. You know, they you know, because I prefer musicians that play ideas rather than notes.
Now, what about directions that you do want to go in? Where do you see the Flower Machine landing, where you can say, okay, I think we've made it? I mean, you don't strike me as the type who's like, it's very important that we're on the cover of Rolling Stones, you know?
Oh, God, no. No, I think it's funny because, you know, like we're talking about and playing tracks from our latest thing, Marmoset Meadow, which has been done for 6 months. So we're already on to our next album, which is called The Tangerine Albatross.
Nice.
I'm sure people are...
These are great names.
and like Brian was saying, this album is it's done with everybody playing at the same time in the studio and just letting Chris and Jim just play whatever they want, and it's everything's getting darker and louder and more progressive rock kind of sounding.
But still with that funk vibe and with the
and with just a hint of the Spice Girls. You know, we're trying to get choreography into the act now.
Yes.
So for you, you're just gonna keep writing music and just keep producing music, and that's really the goal for you, is to not stop making music.
Oh, I don't know. I guess I'm also rather attracted by that sort of Syd Barrett idea of you just stop at a point you know when you're done. Because like what you were saying, I mean, the thing that's the worst thing is like when you have to sort of, you know, say, oh, I like such and such a band, and then add that caveat, their early stuff. You know what I mean? It's like I don't want to ever be in that category.
Yeah, there's a couple of bands who I've loved since my childhood, and I wish they would break up already so they stop making music. Stop ruining my childhood with your cheesy songs and your attempt to, like, you know, identify with today's youth.
Yeah, because those are the people that remain iconic. I think that's one of the main reasons that, you know, some of those, you know, like Wimple Winch is a great example. It's like, you know, because they only made like 4 singles or something and then never and nothing else. And so you get people that are really excited about that. And so that's maybe a better bucket to be into. But, yeah, to answer your question properly, I think there's definitely a level above where we're at now that I'd like to see us go before we stop.
All right, well, why don't you remind us one more time when your next show is?
September 23rd. It's a Sunday night at the Knitting Factory on Hollywood Boulevard. Everybody knows where that is, I think, already.
People should go to your MySpace page or your website to get information. Like, what do you update the most?
The MySpace page gets updated the most.
It's the easiest to update, huh?
Yeah.
So that's myspace.com/theflowermachine. Mm-hmm. And why don't we sign off with one more track from the CD you brought in?
Okay.
Hey, Pete, do you want to do a little bit of the new thing we were working on? Or should we not do that one today?
I do like that one. It's got a good beat, but I can't dance to it. So
all right. Well, we'll put that aside.
It's a little funky.
That's my tune. Wasn't it working in the band? Oh, come on.
What about the other one you had?
Oh, this one?
That one I like.
I thought so.
That's got a certain better. I don't know what.
Oh, that one. All right. Sorry.
All right. Well, okay.
Before I go join the circus, let's play a track. What do you recommend?
I recommend tracks 6, which is the B-side of our Orange Balloon single, and it's called Blown.
All right, you've been listening to Is Good on killradio.org. You can download this interview and performance from myspace.com/thisisgood and isgoodmusic.com. It should be up later today, as well as podcast on iTunes tomorrow. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, Bye.
Thanks for coming in, guys.
Bye. Goodbye.
Okay. Putting up
ricochet in the rubber hole, the chambers loaded. Even your synesthesia just falls me. Within the throne, she comes and you know.